Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Welcome back, everyone. Hey, just a quick reminder that you can find all of our interviews, our past interviews, at ExitCoachRadio.com, all in a nice little audio library. Everything's been indexed. You can search by an advisor's name if you know someone that's been on the show, or you can look by topic. Last I looked, there were over 100, for instance, 100 interviews just on things like family business planning, like we're just talking about. So there are about 30 topics covered at ExitCoachRadio.com. Of course, you can listen to our live shows at ExitCoachNetwork.com, and we're going to launch right into our next guest, and she is Jan Shaw, and Jan is joining us from ADR Services in Los Angeles, and we're going to talk about settling workplace conflict with dignity. So, Jan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Pleasure to have you on, Jan. I know this is this is perfect for this show because we just got finished talking about family business transition and the goal of that being Happy Thanksgiving. So it's perfect that you're coming on now to talk about settling workplace conflicts with dignity. Tell us a little bit about you and your background and what your company ADR Services does.
So, Bill, I was a lawyer for 20 years. I am still a lawyer, but I haven't practiced law in the last 11 or 12 years. So I'm a professional mediator. What that means is at ADR Services or elsewhere, I mediate disputes. Typically, they are in litigation, but some of them are pre-litigation. I also arbitrate disputes. And as you might imagine, a lot of them do revolve around people that are exiting or have been terminated or have a very uneasy exit with their partners or their businesses are dissolving or they've sold their business and then later the buyer comes back and claims that there were misrepresentations as to what was being sold. So I help people that are usually represented by lawyers settle those disputes.
Yeah, there are a lot of areas that create potential conflict because a lot of times, like you said, before the sale, if somebody wants to exit and there's a lot of disagreement probably with the value and what you brought to the table and what I brought to the table or what you didn't bring to the table, right? Things like that.
Right. And then even following that, there are often questions about competition, about trade secrets, even in much younger disputes. But with young business people, there are really no secrets anymore, right? Everything is out there on the internet. And so it's very hard to protect anything that you've built as a business person for a lifetime. So there are often kind of residual issues that linger on.
Yeah, and so everybody knows that the court system has gotten jammed, and it's just not – by the time you get something into a court hearing, it might have been months or even years sometimes before that happens, and many, many thousands of dollars. So a lot of people are turning to mediation, but what's the secret sauce that makes mediation so successful, Jan?
You know, mediation is an opportunity. I like to think of it as an opportunity for the litigants or the disputants to take control of the matter in ways that they cannot do in court. In court, you're going to have an examination, you're going to have a cross-examination, you're going to be limited to the evidence. But in a mediation, you could be much, much more creative. Do you want me to give you an example?
Yeah, would you please?
You know, I had a case just this week where it didn't happen to be an older worker, but it was someone that had been terminated from his job as a wine consultant. And he was, as you might imagine, a very avid wine collector. Only now he couldn't afford to be collecting any wine because he'd been out of work for some months. So he was suing his former employer. And as part of the compensation because they were very unwilling to set some kind of precedent for X amount of dollars for someone in his category to have earned based on the claims that he was making. They ended up also offering him a 5-liter bottle of collectible wine from Italy. His lawyer and I, frankly, kind of scratched our head and went, what? But to him, this was very special because he didn't have the kind of buying power to attend these auctions and to purchase that. And he knew the value. So, you know, the lawyer and I are going, there's no way that can't have a value of $2,500. But to this wine connoisseur, it was a bit of a return of dignity. It was a bit of return of respect to say, we speak the same language, even if our lawyers don't, even if we'd have to package this and put it into court. And, of course, no judge or jury would ever have awarded him this. So it's just kind of a cute example, but that is the magic sauce. I mean, it's a little funny metaphor in this instance because maybe wine is magic sauce always. But but this is the first time that I've settled a case over a bottle of wine.
So it allows for more out-of-the-box thinking and negotiation and settlements that might have some more emotional appeal to someone. Not everything's about money. Sometimes it's about making things right in another way, right?
Right, and it allows the parties to control things that they cannot control in court. They're very limited to causes of action and legal remedies.
Yeah, more in the box, and of course, the goal of both of those avenues, whether it's mediation or court, is to create a reasonable resolution for everyone. So the creativity that can go into mediation, it sounds like, could make it more appealing for people with unusual issues.
Yes, right? and usual issues. I had
and usual one. Issues.
I had another one where it was a land dispute between neighbors. So the buyer of a building had claimed that they had misrepresented how many parking spaces came with it. And lo and behold, the lawyer for the broker happens to invest in real estate as well. And so he offered to purchase it for a handsome profit, so that they could see that this didn't devalue the property. It didn't devalue his purchase. I went, really? You want me to offer him $1.9 million for this property? He said, yeah. I went back to the other guy and I said, well, you won't believe this because this isn't on the table, but he wants to buy the property from you, the lawyer. And he said, well, I wouldn't take $1.9 million, but I'd take 2.1. I said, really? Am I selling real estate now? But yes, you can be all kind of creative in order to get to a place where it almost goes beyond win-win. I'm reading a book now called something like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't remember it. Good for you, great for me.
Got it. Okay. Okay. So now, we don't want to paint a picture that this is all about dealing in unusual circumstances, because you're using a lot of the same. You're going to use a valuation advisor to value, for instance, business shares. You might even bring in a psychologist, right, for a business situation. Maybe they need some help to deal with issues before they get to mediation. Do you ever find that in family businesses that this is really they need more psychological help together to come to coach together before they can get to a point of mediation?
So that's not my realm, really, Bill.
Yeah.
By the
right.
time they get to me, they've already consulted with whomever they need to. They've already chosen to mediate the dispute as opposed to litigate it, as opposed to have someone come in and coach them at their place of business. So it's already been teed up, and everyone's already investigated all of the options and chosen mediation as the one that they want to do, at least for the day that they're with me. So
okay,
I usually do handle things for just a single day. Of course, if they don't settle, I stick with them forever until the case has gone to trial, and sometimes even after trial and on appeal or something like that. That part of it, the coaching part and the psychological part and the kind of healing, I can recommend it after a settlement, but I never get involved in that part of it.
Okay, I guess my point there is this is not an alternative if you have a heated dispute to working out your problems first, just like it wouldn't be a good idea to get in an argument and go right to court. Work on your issues, and then if they can't be resolved, then come to the appropriate professional, and then you can help them work through the issues. Now, let me ask you a question about timing, because that's one concern. Like I said earlier, a lot of people have a concern that if we take this to court, it might be a year. Everything's so backlogged before we get into a courthouse, or maybe not quite that long, but it's going to be a long time. How fast does mediation occur?
Not only that, Bill, but in California, only about 3 or 4% of the cases that are filed ever go to trial, ever. Mm. So it's not just a backlog, it's kind of a misnomer. Really, you file and you spend the money and you get all teed up for something, and then they all resolve almost without going to trial at all. In terms of mediation, depending upon the mediator and the calendar and the urgency and how much time you need, usually you can get in within a month or two, and that usually you need that much time to prepare for it anyways. But the better question, I think, is when's the right time to mediate? So you correctly make the determination that there are times that it isn't right to mediate. You don't want a lawyer up, and you don't want to sit across a table and debate things, and you don't want to make financial demands, which is usually what part of mediation is. My personal opinion is there are lots of good times to mediate. One of them is before a lawsuit is filed. So the real estate one I was talking about, no lawsuit's been filed yet. Mm-hmm. Another is right before trial. Oh, geez, now we're really going to have to spend the money, take the risk, put 12 strangers in a box, inconvenience people. They're not going to understand me, and maybe I'm not going to get what I want out of it anyways. So that's another. A third is even during trial. I had an arbitration, happened to have been an age discrimination matter, and I listened to this old guy for 4 or 5 hours. And the next morning I said to the two lawyers, do you guys want to talk? And sure enough, they really did. He had been able to get everything off of his chest. I had, as the arbitrator, heard everything he had to say. I did not mediate that case because there were conflicts. But they were able to work it out. So there's lots of interval spaces, and part of it is you, the disputant, and your lawyer have to talk about when's the right time, when's the best time.
And when business owners are thinking about this, I'm sure there are a lot of them that think, well, we can just hash this out ourselves, can't we? So why would you suggest that it's a bad idea for a business owner to try to do this themselves? And in other words, what's your value proposition?
Why would you think I thought it was a bad idea for them to do it themselves? I think it's a great idea for them to do it themselves. When they can't, when the communication shuts down, when the sides line up in an adversarial way and it becomes apparent that they need some help, that's when they need a mediator. My value proposition is I start out neutral. I got no stake in the game. I also am a pretty seasoned professional at this point. I've been doing this for 13 years exclusively. So I can come in and kind of drill down to what really are the facts, what really are the most compelling features of each side. I can communicate it to each side in ways that they couldn't communicate to one another. I find myself almost daily saying, if only you had heard what they said to me today, 2 years ago when this dispute developed, I bet you could have resolved it then. And they do, and they resolve it. And there's a lot of face-saving. There's a lot of reframing so they feel better about it, good for you and great for me. There's a lot of hand-holding, walking through it. There's a lot of emotion, a lot of anger, a lot of tears. But I'm able to handle it and kind of go between the two sides in ways that they couldn't do directly. But if they can, it's a beautiful thing. Absolutely.
So listeners, it sounds like when you get to that point where you've done all you can and you come up with that phrase that we all hear, I guess we're going to have to agree to disagree. I guess that's the point that you call someone like Jan to say, we disagree, we can't get past these points, we need help. Does that sound fair, Jan?
Yes.
That's when they should?
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's great. Okay, so the other question I wanted to ask you is, there's a lot of technology and a lot of things circling around out there, but from a futuristic standpoint, what do you see as the future of conflict resolution?
You know, I am not a great believer in the internet value. I think that this is a very old-fashioned art, like diplomacy, that takes kind of hand-holding person to person. I find over and over again that the obstacle to settling is that people have never sat down across the table from one another and talked. They, you know, they get to letter writing, they get to internet. So I don't see that facet of it as changing. I see that there are more and more cases that are being required to go through an ADR process, an alternative dispute resolution process. So just as in, for example, alternative medicine, we're seeing the alternative become the dominant. So, you know, when you're starting to catch a cold, you don't go to the doctor anymore. You take some echinacea and hot tea or chicken soup if you've got some. And in my world, before you go to court, you routinely go through a mediation process to see if you can get it resolved outside of that. So what I think is just kind of a societal shift where we're going to be less litigious and more conflict resolution friendly.
Okay, so yeah, that's a great point. So you kind of see this as an evolutionary shift where we're going to be trying to solve things more quickly, rapidly, and personally more
And if I may, I think it really stems from very early on. I've raised three kids now, and I saw that they weren't in school required to be competitive with one another. They kind of never knew who were the smart kids and who got the best grades and that sort of thing, the way that I did when I was in school. They were very much, even in college, put on teams. It was all collaborative thinking. And I think that lawyers are also kind of in that collaborative mode, whereas I had trial advocacy, but I didn't have any ADR classes when I was in law school 30 years ago. So I really think that it's going to shift all the way, that even from childhood, American children are being raised to think in teams, to think creatively, to think outside the box, but also to think about win-win instead of instead of the zero-sum game that we were raised with.
Great. Jen, we only have a couple minutes left. Could you give our listeners some tips, ideas, or precautions they could take away from this interview?
So, you know, I was thinking about the beach because we are having a heat wave here in California. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about drawing lines in the sand. And why ever does anyone even use that expression of drawing lines in the sand? Because those are washed away, they're blown away, it's just a kernel here, a kernel there of sand. So I would say don't draw those lines in the sand because they are inevitably going to be washed away. I would say be creative in both your approach to conflict and the resolution. And I would say God gave you two ears and only one mouth. Listen more than you speak. You are inevitably going to hear things that will help you to sort through what's in the best interest of the other side and why the other side is taking the position that they're taking. So perspective tanking.
Very good. That's great stuff. Now, tell us about your book. It's called View from the Middle of the Road, A Mediator's Perspective on Life, Conflict, and Human Interactions. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
All right. Tell us about it.
Love to tell you about my book. It started as a bit of a challenge. It was kind of, I'm a lifelong journaler, and I also love writing. It's the one thing I miss about practicing law. So I sat down in my backyard for a year, and every weekend I'd kind of journal on one case that I had handled in a way to kind of think of what I'd done right and wrong and what I could have done differently. To me, the stories were so engaging that I decided to publish it and hope that it will be useful as kind of a case book for people that are involved in disputes and for mediators who don't learn from case books because all of what we do is confidential. So basically, you never get the benefit of the publication of how a particular case went. Even the stories I've told you here today are not completely truthful or accurate because I can't risk that
I would
be blowing their confidences.
So the book is available on Amazon. And
it's called
View from the Middle of the Road, A Mediator's Perspective on Life, Conflict, and Human Interaction. And Jan, how would our listeners best get in touch with you to discuss a situation?
Well, I have a website, www.shaw, that's spelled S-C-H-A-U, the Norwegian way, shawmediation.com. And I have an office with ADR Services. I'm a professional panel neutral of that service. The phone number there is 310-210-0010. And I also have a website for the book called viewfromthemiddleoftheroad.com. I'm also an active blogger, and so welcome your listeners to log on to my website, and then they can subscribe to my blog, which goes out every week.
It sounds like if they get to your website, they'll find out about all of this. And again,
they'll find everything.
It's Shaw, S-C-H-A-U, mediation.com. Jan, it's been a real pleasure. Our time went by quickly, but I learned a lot, and I hope our listeners did too. Thanks very much for joining us. I hope you'll come back and visit with us again soon.
Thank you very much, Bill. It's been my pleasure as well.
I've been talking with Jan Shaw of ADR Services. Thanks for listening today. We have a bit of a short show today. That's going to do it for our show today, but we want to thank you for listening and tuning in, and I want to thank my guest, David Karofsky of the Transition Consulting Group, and Jan Shaw of ADR Services. They gave us some great tips, didn't they? I mean, things you can use for your family business and your interactions with other people out there. That's what we're after, tips, ideas, and precautions that you can use on a daily basis. So remember, we're here on a weekly basis. We have new content uploaded daily at exitcoachradio.com. We have exitcoachnetwork.com. And we also have another website that you can find an advisor to help you all over the country. We're building out this website called exitcoachadvisorlist.com. So if you go to any of those sites, you'll find all kinds of tips, ideas, precautions, people. You'll find help, because we're really here to help you, our hero, the private business owner, with tips, ideas, and precautions so that you are well planned.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing over 250 top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.